So, good morning. I'm going to talk today about heart opening and loneliness in these holidays, especially with COVID and new restrictions that have come out, forbidding us to travel or to, I don't know if it's like this where you live, but where we live, they're even telling us that if you're in a bubble, the bubble is burst. Don't even see people within your so-called bubble. Stay at home, only do necessary things that you need to do. Otherwise, stay home. So the holidays are actually a time of loneliness for a lot of people anyway. And I'm sure that this, I'm sure for myself, I'm sure in so many ways that this is true, even truer now. And I was wondering, I even think that people who don't necessarily celebrate the specific big name holidays, you know, Hanukkah or Christmas, Kwanzaa, I'm sure there are others that I know I'm forgetting, feel it, because it's a time of family gathering. Yes, my wife, who, Chie, who was from Japan and came here at the age of 26 to live, what her first holiday here was like, knowing that in Japan, that Christmas is actually a much smaller celebration. It's sort of for lovers rather than a big holiday like we have here. And just seeing all the people doing things and family events made her feel very, very lonely. So just being around in this country in the holidays and not having family, or not being able to see family, I think it's just lonely for everyone. So one way to think of heart opening is an opening up to our loneliness and the loneliness of others is expressed through the Metta Sutta. I'm going to read just a little bit of it. Probably many of you are familiar with it. We do it during sesshins and other occasions. What I'm going to read is, starts here. May all beings be happy. May we be joyous and live in safety. All living beings, whether weak or strong, in higher, middle, or low realms of existence, small or great, visible or invisible, near or far, born or to be born, may all beings be happy. Did you notice that the word said all beings? So that's our family. That's our friends. That's beings who are weak or strong in higher, middle, or low realms of existence, small or great, visible or invisible, nearer to be far, born or to be born. That's us. I think we're included. The Metta Sutta goes on to say that even as a mother, at the risk of her life, watches over and protects her only child, so with a boundless mind should one cherish all living things, suffusing love over the entire world, above, below, and all around without limit. So let one cultivate an infinite goodwill towards the whole world, the whole world. So there's two things about that. I'm going to try to remember to use the word parent when I come back to this, even though the actual word is mother, because I think the spirit is very inclusive. And the other thing is that the last verse said that use the word should. Let me highlight that. Even as a mother, at the risk of her life, etc., cherishes all living beings. So with a boundless mind, should one cherish all living things? I'm thinking that I would like to take the word should a little bit lightly in this context, in that you can't really force your heart to open. You can't force yourself to have compassion. So I think that that's a really important point in heart opening, is that it happens. And it happens through our loneliness. Also, just another note about the Metta Sutta, that in case it's helpful to remember it, Metta means loving kindness. So that's for ourselves and others. So sometimes our loneliness is actually for others instead of ourselves. I know that tends to be, that's kind of more the case for me in some ways, that I have family and friends who don't have anyone, and I feel pretty bad for them. And that is an interesting fact about this. And yes, I say fact because there's research on this, that there's healthy and unhealthy empathy that's different from compassion. I was reading this Washington Post article from 2017 that cites a whole bunch of studies that show that actually empathy is different from compassion psychologically. If you try to feel somebody else's pain, or if you actually do feel their pain, that can lead to a lot of burnout. And then that actually isn't good for compassion long term. And psychologists say, I'm going to just read from the article. Psychologists say that we can learn to regulate our empathy as we do other emotions, and even transform excessive emotional empathy into less stressful compassion. You want to feel with another person, but you don't want to stay there, says Robin Stern, who's an associate director at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. And they recommend, psychologists recommend, compassionate meditation, such as imagining somebody else, instead of imagining somebody else's loneliness or other suffering, imagine that they're relieved of them. And you can repeat a phrase silently in your mind. This is, again, mainstream psychology saying, repeat, may you be happy and free of suffering. Does that sound familiar? Sounds like what I started with, right? The Metta Sutta, which also has a form that's often used in meditation as a sort of heart opening, a loving kindness meditation on others, where we hold somebody in our heart. Often you start with yourself, then you expand to somebody who you love, then maybe you expand to somebody who you're uncomfortable with, and then you expand to the whole world and just wish that those beings and all beings be happy and free from suffering. So Professor Richard Davidson of the University of Wisconsin at Madison goes on to say that encouraging the focus of the person's well-being and happiness instead of their distress actually shifts their brain's pathways from experiencing painful empathy to the more rewarding areas of compassion. It's this process that helps us detach from suffering. I will quibble and say we don't necessarily want detachment from suffering, but non-attachment, which is more like holding it lightly. It's we're not trying to be robots or something like that. We do want to be able to feel, but we don't want to be overwhelmed by it. And Davidson continues that research shows that these simple exercises, like the Metta meditation, actually affect your actions in the real world, making you more likely to be pro-social and helpful. So there's that. Something that I've also noticed in my own heart is the feeling of inhabiting somebody else's suffering. So it's very intimate, and that's heart opening in the beginning. And then you have to move on from it, or else, again, you can find yourself burned out. You can find yourself caught in it. And it's helpful, a helpful reminder to me was that I've similarly gone through phases where I feel like nobody understands me, where I felt lonely and misunderstood. No one gets my pain, I think. If I sit with that a moment, I can notice that that's actually, if I went all the way with that, nobody feels my pain. It would be rather harmful to fulfill that. I want you to feel my pain. I don't think so. I think that would be the opposite of compassion. And I don't think it would help me if other people felt exactly the pain I feel. So it's not helpful for us to stay with the pain of others, to feel it with the intensity they feel. Again, hold a person in your heart and hold them lightly and wish them well and be there for them. I also have a tendency to try to fix things, try to help people who aren't ready to be helped. Same phenomenon. A thing that we can do in this holiday season specifically is to realize that we're actually giving a lot of love and compassion by being safe, by having telephone conversations instead of family gatherings, being on Zoom or whatever your family does, or finding ways to be safe but not do what you would normally have done with your family and friends. Remember that you're supporting them and they're supporting you when you do that. And this won't be forever. Nothing is. So next, of course, is where I started, which is self-compassion. So what about when you have your own loneliness? In this case, we can feel very alone. We can say we don't want others to feel our pain and inhabit our pain, but that can just make us feel more alone. In that regard, there are many ways in which we're really not alone. I mean, for one, of course, the whole world is supporting us just by our life, by the complete interconnection of all things. Second, there's a story I want to share that really illustrates this point. This is by Jack Kornfield, an essay that's published on his website. He writes that several years ago, I was giving a talk on compassion with Pema Chodron, who is also, so Jack Kornfield is a Buddhist teacher in a different tradition than ours. He's a great teacher, is well known. He's been a Vipassana teacher, if that means anything to you. Pema Chodron is a teacher in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. Jack Kornfield writes that several years ago, I was giving a talk on compassion with Pema Chodron in a large hall in San Francisco filled with at least 3,000 participants. At one point, a young woman stood up and spoke in the most raw and painful way about her partner's suicide several weeks before. She was experiencing a gamut of complex emotions such as agonizing grief and confusion, guilt and anger, loss and fear. Pema had her hold it all in compassion. As I listened to her, I could feel her loneliness. So I asked the group when she finished, "How many of you in this room have experienced the suicide of someone in your family or someone really close to you?" More than 200 people stood up. I asked her to look around the room at the eyes of those who had gone through a similar tragedy and survived. As they gazed at one another, everyone in the room could feel the presence of true compassion, as if we were in a great temple. We all felt the suffering that is part of our humanity and part of the mystery we share. It reminds me of all those pop songs that I used to think were, well, I still think they're funny. They say things like, "When I'm alone with you," or "We're together all alone." And of course, they're talking about like romantic getaways. And I always thought, are you alone or are you together? Are you alone or are you with the other person? It's actually a great phrase if you kind of take it out of that context. We are all alone together. We're together all alone. I'm alone with you. We're with each other. So we are alone, and we're never alone. I think we also burn out. I know I do. I burn out from feeling so sorry for myself, which could be called self-empathy as opposed to self-compassion. Self-pity. And to my experience, that feels like it's based upon identifying myself with what I do, with what's called self-esteem. Things are going badly. I feel terrible. I really feel terrible. And then goes down the spiral. To me, inhabiting my feelings of loneliness or aloneness or being going deeper seems to be I don't want to say better because that still invites comparisons. Am I doing better or worse? But it seems to, I'm going to just repeat the word deeper. It's deeper, richer than trying to turn away. So turning toward it, turning toward those feelings. Incidentally, I ran across research that says that psychologists have now kind of jettison the idea of self-esteem as being healthy for you because it has so many costs in favor of self-compassion. Because self-esteem is based on sometimes on based on external factors too much. I'm looking again at the Metta Sutta and coming back to the idea that a parent at the risk of their life will cherish and protect their only child. And to me, that has to do with letting go of this sense of the self we want to be, the self we expect. I shouldn't be so lonely. Things should be different. I should have a better life. And being with it. So, at the risk of your life, can you be compassionate to yourself? I think that's right. If by life means what I expect my life to be, I risk my comfort to go deeper, to open my heart. Pema Chodron writes in The Lion's Roar in November 18th. She writes about six kinds of loneliness, which I'm not going to go into, but I am going to I'm going to quote her. This really resonated with me. She said, "We hear a lot about the pain of samsara. Samsara is basically our life in which we suffer and we feel trapped. We hear a lot about the pain of samsara, and we also hear about liberation. But we don't hear how much about how painful it is to go from being completely stuck to becoming unstuck. The process of becoming unstuck requires tremendous bravery because basically we are completely changing our way of perceiving reality, like changing our DNA. Changing our DNA. So it's not just personal. It's what we are as human, or what we think we are as human, perhaps. So going from the narrow sense of loneliness to being with loneliness and deepening the practice, opening our heart to it, is really like going through some very deeply entrenched patterns. I have so many stories, and believe it or not, there are stories I couldn't include. One of them that I do want to include is a story about, it doesn't really matter where I heard this, but for background, I went to a hearing on the law, a new law that, well, a two-year-old law in California that's still in process of having rules set up for it that forbids employers from asking about criminal history. And so in the hearing, a lot of people were talking about their experiences and why it's important to give people another chance who've been incarcerated. And in this case, Father Gregory Boyle, who is with a group that helps Homeboy Industries, that helps rehabilitate former gang members, talked about somebody who had been in a gang after having had just this horrible childhood. He was abused every day, and he was abused so badly that he would bleed from his wounds. And he would go to school and he would wear 3 shirts when he was in elementary school. And kids would make fun of him, but he didn't want anyone to see the blood through his shirts. Eventually, after a lot of pain, he turned his life around, but he still had the wounds and he still wore 3 shirts for many years as an adult. Father Boyle asked him to give a talk, not knowing what he was going to say. And this man spoke of his experience, spoke of his wounds, and said that he no longer wears 3 shirts. He said, "How can I heal the wounded if I don't welcome my own wounds?" And I think that's true. That's what going deeper is about. Finally, I'd like to share a koan in this book called The Hidden Lamp, which is about a women's tradition that has long been sort of buried in Buddhism of wise women. They're basically koans that have been discovered, or that koans are basically Zen stories meant to push you beyond your intellect, push you deeper, push you to your heart, if you will. You go beyond reason, and they're often paradoxical. This one the only place you'll find this koan is in this book. It's by a modern teacher named Maylee Scott. So this one is called Maylee Scott Meets Loneliness. Crying in despair, an earnest student asked her teacher, Aisho Maylee Scott, "I worked so hard to transform this crippling loneliness. I can neither shake it nor live with it. Can you help me?" Holding the student in a steady gaze and offering her confident smile, Maylee ended the conversation with, please don't think anything is ever out of place. Now, the writer of this, Diane Musho Hamilton, reflected that at first this response, don't ever think anything is out of place, reminds her of sort of like the dinner table arrangements where you have the candles and the flowers and everything's just really nicely set out, the placemats. And it didn't ever speak to her about loneliness. It seemed like I'm waiting for my dinner party to arrive. She felt that loneliness seems more messy, like after the dinner when everyone's gone home and you've got all the dishes and the candles have dripped down onto the table and you've got all your cleanup to do. But she went deeper. Incidentally, I suspect that this koan comes from a conversation between Hamilton and Maylee Scott, because how would she know otherwise? But she had, she did confess of having a lot of deep loneliness her whole life. And she was in New York City, which I've never been there. I've never lived there especially, but I understand that if you live in New York, it's a terrible place to be lonely. And of course it would be. She said she was sitting in a bath and just feeling really overwhelmed by that feeling of loneliness in New York. She writes, with nowhere else to go, I allowed this loneliness in. And I sank deeper into the feeling and into the tub. And something surprising happened. I felt the warmth of the water surround my skin and saw the steam rising and fading. The tub showed up vivid and white, and the walls stood out in their dingy hotel yellow. Soon the pipes, the faucets, the toilet, and the sink were all there. Nothing was out of place, and I couldn't have felt more at home. Maylee Scott was right. When we make room for loneliness, we allow for everything. We experience directly the pain of the separate self, and we can see beyond its limits to everything as it is. Nothing ever can be out of place. The one true heart that embraces all things reveals itself to us. I said finally, but this is really fun. I found a meta prayer that's attributed to Maylee Scott that I'm going to read, and it's whole. It's clearly based on the Metta Sutta I read at the beginning. So here's Maylee's meta prayer. This is what should be accomplished by the one who is wise. May I be well, loving, and peaceful. May all beings be well, loving, and peaceful. May I be at ease in my body, feeling the ground beneath my seat and feet, letting my back be long and straight, enjoying breath as it rises and falls and rises. May I know and be intimate with body-mind, whatever its feelings or mood, calm or agitated, tired or energetic, irritated or friendly. Breathing in and out, aware, moment by moment, of the risings and passings. May I be attentive and gentle toward my own discomfort and suffering. May I be attentive and grateful for my own joy and well-being. May I move toward others freely and with openness. May I receive others with sympathy and understanding. May I move toward the suffering of others with peaceful and attentive confidence. May I recall the Bodhisattva of compassion. Her 1,000 hands, for instant readiness for action, each hand with an eye in it, the instinctive knowing what to do. May I continually cultivate the ground of peace for myself and others and persist, mindful and dedicated to this work, independent of results. May I know that my peace and the world's peace are not separate, that our peace in the world is a result of our work for justice. May all beings be well, happy, and peaceful. So, I'm happy, willing, and able to take questions and comments. Mary? You're muted.
It wasn't Diane. When the Maley's response, it was not about, I have a pretty good idea who it was, but at any rate, it wasn't Diane. Diane lives in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they ever met. They might have, but at any rate, it was somebody else. And I'm happy that you quote. You know that Maley was one of my best friends. She died about, more than 15 years ago. And she was a teacher in Arcata after she left Berkeley. Thank you.
You're welcome. I never met her, and I wish I had. She was, actually haven't even been practicing 15 years, so I wouldn't have run across her in Zen communities anyway. I actually can't see everybody, so if somebody has their hands in gassho that I'm not seeing, please just speak up. Oh, I see you, Nabella.
Thank you for that. That was really a wonderful, really appreciate you sharing the metta prayer as well. And I also, I'm reflecting, and I have often reflected on how can I welcome the wounded if I can't heal my own wound. I really try to walk with self-healing in the especially being in the business I'm in, just it's a wonderful reflection just to be present and I won't take up too much time. There's so much in my head about that, but thank you for sharing.
Thank you for your comment, and thank you for the work you do. I feel like you're really on the front lines, and your healing work is very much appreciated.
Steve, I put mine in gallery view so I can call on people for you if you'd like.
Thank you. I would like you to do that. I have a tablet where I can't see everyone at once.
Kate?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I'm sorry I missed the beginning. Our internet has been challenging this morning, and it keeps kicking me out. So if I disappear, it's not intended. So, but I did hear most of what you had to say, and I love, you know, I think I might have been at that thing in San Francisco with Jack Kornfield and Pema Chodron.
Oh, okay.
Sunny and I went to it. I think it was at the big Masonic Temple or something. We were at a big event with both of them on the front stage. I think I remember that experience, but what I wanted to say really was I love the Metta Sutta And I'm so happy that you spoke more about it. And, you know, since I've been working with this arising and vanishing koan myself these last weeks, I keep asking things like, and even when you were talking, well, whose suffering is this? Mm-hmm. whose is it? You know, and I don't have an answer to that. But it's working me in some way. And I'll keep you posted if I come up with any response to that. But I always find when we chant the Metta Sutta together, it to be so nourishing, just to say those words and have them vibrate through my body, you know, and again, I can't really explain what that does, but it feels nourishing when we chant that chant together. So thank you for calling our attention to it again.
You're welcome. And asking the question is the kind of thing that I felt that I was, well, learning and preparing for this talk, but also have been learning. In the beginning I mentioned, I don't know if you're here for that, but I mentioned that even though the Metta Sutta uses the word should, that we should be like a mother, protecting her only child, that should can also lead us, to try to force ourselves to be compassionate, and rather, opening up to it is, a deeper practice, and not putting obstacles in our own way if we don't say, I should be compassionate, but if we open up and say, who is suffering, or some question. As I learned when I was working with a different koan, asking the question is enough, bow and withdraw.
Okay.
So.
Zach?
Steve, that was awesome today. My heart feels sort of dense right now. Yesterday I was, for clients of mine, I make a calendar with pictures of vineyards and people and stuff. And I did the first one yesterday for my big client. And I was thinking what to write on the front, you know, like 2020 sucked. Here's to 2021. And, you know, so much of what you talked about seems magnified right now. I think you sort of referenced to that. And so I kind of had this thought doing the calendars, like, well, next year is going to be better. So let's look forward to next year. But that's a trap. That's a trick. And we need to deal with right now. And and I think we all experience some loneliness or feelings of isolation or not being able to be with people we want to be with. And your talk was helpful and gave me things to think about, which I think is probably the best compliment. Maybe it'll be better next year at some point. But we don't live there. We live here and now. So, so I just want to say thank you. And thank you for inspiration.
You're very welcome. Well, I guess it's about time.
Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable, I vow to become it.
Actually, we've been doing it 3 times.
Oh, okay.
That speaker goes ahead and does their 3 bows and so on.
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's